You're listening to Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Bridget Bowden with a story about a performer who's become a fixture at Wisconsin baseball games. It's part of WPR's Wisconsin Road Trip series, featuring pit stops across the state to explore the people, places, and things that make Wisconsin summers special.
For some people in Wisconsin, baseball is a summer staple. And for Kenosha Kingfish fans, there's a baton-twirling usher who is an icon at the team's Northwoods League games. WPR's Evan Casey has more from the ballpark.
For the land of the free and the home of the brave.
A day at the ballpark is one of the best parts of summer. It's Father's Day at historic Simmons Field, the home of the Kenosha Kingfish. The team is part of the Northwoods League, and their games have something for everyone.
Dan wants you to buy him a Philly cheesesteak for Father's Day. No more ties, no more mugs, Philly cheesesteaks.
Another fixture at Kingfish games is Jane Snedeker. Before the game, she's handing out special wristbands to fans.
So this is your wristband.
Okay.
The 75-year-old retired school teacher is a Jane of all trades. She's a host mom, an usher, and has even donned the team's King Elvis mascot suit. But to most fans, she's known as Twirling Jane.
I started twirling when I was in sixth grade on Long Island.
Over 60 years and a move to the Midwest later, Snedeker still hasn't put her batons down. She used to perform a quick twirling routine during long pitching changes and delays. Now, it's a nightly ritual at every home game. Snedeker parades around behind home plate to the tune of YMCA, and she invites anyone and everyone to join in on the fun.
It's a little awkward to go up to people that you don't know and ask them to join, but sometimes some of the kids are coming up to me. I usually keep a baton in my car at all times. You never know when you have to have a parade or something.
Snedeker is also a host mom. Around 80 college players from across the nation will cleat up for the Kingfish this summer, and many of them need a place to stay.
I learned that some of the players needed housing, and I live a mile away. My husband had died, and I had two sons, and I thought, well, maybe that would be good for the kids, and I can help out the team.
It's hard to estimate just how many people have stayed with her. Most summers, one or two players take up her guest rooms. But during the 1995 season, she had six players in her home. Some slept in the basement, while others took over the family room.
It was fun, because if I would look on the field, sometimes my house was all in the field. You know, I might have, you know, I had an outfielder, I had a first baseman or something like that.
Most of the players are college students, which means they cannot get paid to play for the Kingfish. But they can accept donations of room and board. In the meals, Snedeker regularly cooks for them. Pennsylvania native Robbie Porco stayed with her last summer. He says she cooked breakfast for him every morning and even had warm cookies waiting at home if the team won.
I mean, she was everything I could have asked for as like a host mom for the summer. Like, super accommodating. It was like her house was my house, that kind of thing.
In all, there are around 20 host families for the team. Eva Hoy is another one of them. Back at the ballpark, she says she's known Jane for several years.
And when you stop her, she'll say, what do you have now? You know who I have? You know how many I have in the back? So it's her energy level. It's she's always got new ideas, and she'll say, here, hold these pom-poms. I have to do this.
Snedeker means so much to baseball in Kenosha that the team had a bobblehead night in her honor. Several teachers she knows in Kenosha came to the game, and her sons came back into town from California.
It was a lot of fun. I was glad it didn't rain. The Kingfish won, and there was a lot of fun going on here.
When it comes to baton twirling at games, Snedeker says she doesn't plan on stopping anytime soon.
WPR's Evan Casey brought us that story on Twirling Jane of the Kenosha Kingfish. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Bridget Bowden.
This is Wisconsin Today.
The first and last Carnegie Libraries built in Wisconsin are both in Superior, and they're both for sale.
In the late 19th and early 20th centuries, the steel mogul and philanthropist Andrew Carnegie donated $56 million to build over 2,500 libraries worldwide, with the majority of them being in the U.S.
Carnegie said he believed free libraries were a public good. His gift made free public libraries the standard in the U.S. 63 of them were built in Wisconsin.
Teddy Maronick is a retired librarian and a local Superior historian. She worked at both of Superior's Carnegie Libraries. Teddy, welcome back to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you for inviting me again.
How did Superior come to be the first city in Wisconsin to have a Carnegie Library?
Well, I guess we're fast workers up here, maybe because of the cold. Because we didn't get the first grant in Wisconsin from Carnegie for a library. Both Green Bay and Sheboygan beat us, but we finished our library first.
Ah, okay. And what makes Carnegie Libraries unique? Why are they so special?
Well, I think it's just the thought of Andrew Carnegie deciding that he was going to give away 90% of his wealth to improve the lives of people. And Superior had a library, but before we got the first Carnegie, the libraries were all in rented buildings. So we didn't have a permanent home here. And I think that was the greatest benefit of this, is that we had a building that we knew was ours and was always going to be ours because of the generosity of Mr. Carnegie.
And East End Carnegie Library, that was the last Carnegie Library to be built in Wisconsin. It opened in 1918, becoming a private residence in 1992, now on the market again. Why did this particular building stop being a library?
Well, they both stopped being a library because Superior had decided it was time for a new library and had renovated a former grocery store into our new library. So not only was East End Branch closed, the main library was closed, and we had two station libraries in neighborhoods that were also closed and consolidated into one building.
And you used to work at the East End Carnegie Library. What did this building... what was it like as it was bustling and you were working in it? How did it speak to you?
The East End Library had been my childhood library. So this is sort of a dream come true for me. And some of the books I had read were still on the shelf. But it was a great library because it was built with the idea in mind that East End was too far from the library downtown, and also because East End had so many schools so close to the library. We had two Catholic schools, a public school, and a high school that were in walking distance of the library, most of them only a couple blocks away. So it was a great place for the kids. And that's something I always concentrated on when I was a librarian there, you know, making sure we had programs for the kids, story hours, and all of that. It was a wonderful job.
And you recently toured the building with a realtor. What was it like to see the inside that was your old workplace and then converted to a home?
Well, it took me about 15 years to go in there the first time after the library moved out. And they've done a lovely job on the upstairs, but it's not a library anymore. And I understand that. You know, I never expected those buildings to stay as they were, but it some ways it was harder for me to see East End than it was to see the main library downtown. Hmm. It's just, it was just really hard. But as I said, they've done a nice job, and I have all these memories that extend from childhood on about it.
Can you share one of those memories?
From when I was young?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. When I think back on it, my mother and dad were both great readers, and my mother would always send me to the East End Library with the titles of books that she had read when she was young. And sure enough, I would find them there. And It's a great experience for a kid to have a neighborhood library, because that's your first step towards adulthood, because your parents allow you, at least they did when I was growing up, they allow you to walk to the library, which was only a block away, of course, and they let you go there and choose what you want to read. And I always think of that. I can still see the books on the shelves from when I was a kid. I was obsessed with all these biographies of famous women, and the library had a whole set of those books. And I just thought that was the most exciting thing, that I was allowed to go there and make my own choices about what I was going to bring home.
We're talking about the first and last Carnegie libraries to be built in Wisconsin. They're both for sale. They're both in Superior. And Teddy Moronic worked at these libraries, is also a local historian. Teddy, take us to the Hammond Avenue Carnegie Library. So this is the library that was the first to be built in Wisconsin, the first Carnegie Library built here. It opens in 1902, serves as a library until 91, but also the Friends of the Superior Carnegie Library got involved in this particular structure. How have the Friends groups helped out with these?
I don't know. I just think, this is my personal opinion. I don't know. There's so many things that went on that people got involved or decided they could make something out of this library, and everything failed time after time after time. People had its best interests at heart, but from the very beginning, the problem with the main library is that when it was sold to the first developers, the title to the land had not been cleared. So they couldn't make a move on developing it until that happened. So, and that's why it looks like it does today.
What does it look like inside? How much has it fallen apart?
The first time I walked around it last summer, I hadn't been around the building in many years, and the windows are low on the bottom floor to the ground, and you can see in. And I had realized where my desk was when I first started at the library and worked there, that the floor had fallen in. And then when I went in it this time, it was unimaginable to me what had happened. And it was such a beautiful building, even in 1992, with all its problems. You know, when we left on, you know, New Year's Eve 1991, it had lots of problems, but they could have been fixed.
The city is now seeking another developer to purchase the building. What might potential tenants and future uses look like, and what would preserve its historical character?
Well, the thing is, at the main library, everything is kind of still there, you know, the woodwork and the beautiful staircases. And I was amazed when I went up to the top floor that the old boardroom and the old art room are in perfect shape. The director's office is in very good shape. Everything else is just terrible. But I would like to see that happen, you know, like somebody would take the bones that are there and work with them. Initially, they were going to, you know, make it into apartments. That would be okay with me. I mean, I'd love to see it as a, you know, coffee shop / bookstore or something, but I don't know if that's even possible nowadays, and especially in Superior, we're a small town. So I don't know. I really, the only thing I want is somebody to take care of it and love it as much as all of us who worked there did.
What did you love about your work as a librarian?
I loved being the first person to see the new books. I loved the kids that I worked with. I loved my patrons. I loved that the opportunity that the library gave me. They gave me the opportunity to become sort of to dive deeply into Superior's history, because that was my job when I moved to the new library. I was to become the local history librarian. You know, I got the chance to read all about Superior's history, which I had known nothing about, and just fell in love with it. And to me, that was the greatest blessing. It was that I got to learn about my hometown in depth. And I met so many great people through that, not only in Superior, but practically all over the world who are interested in Superior. I always say at least one person, everybody has at least one person that has a connection to Superior, Wisconsin.
Teddy, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for talking with me and letting me share my love of the Superior Libraries.
Teddy Moronic is a retired librarian and a historian in Superior. She worked at both of Superior's Carnegie Libraries, and now these libraries are for sale and in need of new development.